time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Hello and a good evening to you all. It's Tuesday the 18th of October. I'm Ronan Berry and you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up between now and 8pm, Anne-Marie Feary introduces Feary Farm's new Beet Bullet as the Kilcorma company continues to grow and expand its product portfolio. Declan Doran of the Technological University of the Shannon will be here to talk about the launch today of a partnership with numerous Midlands remote hubs that's going to see TUSA services from the Department of Lifelong Learning spread right across the three counties. Also, European Movement Ireland Deputy CEO Stephen O'Shea will be along to give you all the details on a public meeting entitled Energy and Rural Communities that's been hosted by Technological University of the Shannon next week. All details on that to come a little bit later in the show. To get involved in the conversation this evening, you can do so by text or WhatsApp on 083 3010 103 with thanks to Lamb Brothers Toyota Tullamore. I'm always delighted to hear your opinions. For any other matters, you can get in touch on business@midlands103.com by email, and if you've got anything you'd like to see featured on the show. But as always, your opinion is highly valued and respected on this show, and we'll be delighted to put it to any of this evening's contributors if you'd like to get in touch with us. That and lots more in terms of any announcements I come across and things that are happening in the region, we'll bring them to you between now and 8pm. So even though we're going to go back about 2 weeks, and we think particularly the fallout from Budget 2023, a budget that was well received at large. There was one particular item on it that really caught a lot of business people's attention, and it turned out lots of homeowners and potential home builders, construction companies and everybody associated really with the construction industry. It is, of course, the controversial concrete levy. It seemed to just slip in at the tail end of the budget, and it was proposed that 10% levy would go on all concrete products from, I think it was originally around April 2023. Well, you'd know from listening to Midlands Today here on Midlands 103 over the past couple of weeks, and even myself here on Taking Care of Business, that it certainly wasn't welcomed by too many, if any, people. And there's been a bit of a climb down today. As Tom Parlin pointed out in the show 2 weeks ago, it had become a bit of a political football. He felt the government cutting back down because the opposition were really, you know, taking them to task over it. So something was going to have to stay. So there's been a bit of a development today. But I'm going to take you to yesterday when Tom Parlin, the Coolderry native, of course, who's the Director General of the Construction Industry Federation, he came out and made a statement that building levies that are going to be used to fund the micro redress scheme should be aimed at manufacturers. The CDF, of course, doesn't represent manufacturers. It represents construction companies. Cabinet ministers were due to discuss their proposed changes yesterday. But Pascal Donoghue had reiterated even yesterday morning that it was still going to go ahead despite all the pressure that was coming from backbenchers to change or indeed to scrap it. Mr. Parlin says that manufacturers should be paying the levy. Here's what he had to say recently.
The issue in Donegal with Mica was defective concrete blocks. Nobody has ever challenged that. It was defective concrete blocks that were supplied to the house builder or the industry. And a lot of the houses in Donegal were self-builds. So it's the wrong target. It's not the industry. It was the manufacturing and the supply side. And they should be targeted.
And that was Mr. Parlin, of course, Director General of the CIF's viewpoint on that. Then today, the news came that the levy would be staying, although it was being brought down to 5%. And there is some detail still needed on it, but it's expected that the levy will last for a number of years and a sunset clause will not be included. Minister of Finance Pascal Donoghue outlines the revenue that will be lost as a result of this cut to the levy.
It is a change in terms of the rate. The loss of revenue, which is €30 million out of €87 billion of tax revenue for next year. I am accepting that it is a change versus what I announced on Budget Day. When this debate began after the budget, there were many calls and many claims upon me not to bring forward the levy at all. It is happening next year.
Not quite a UK-style climb down, but certainly it is a huge change to it. And of course, it's not due to come in until September next year. One asks the question, is that leaving enough time for maybe to be overturned entirely? But to get a little bit of industry perspective on it, I'm delighted to be joined by Anthony Hanafy. Anthony's the Chief Financial Officer with Condren Concrete based in Tullamore. And he's also the President of Tullamore and District Chamber of Commerce. Anthony, very good evening to you.
Thank you, Ronan.
Anthony, just take us, when this first word first broke of a concrete levy, what was the reaction from yourselves and Conjuring Concrete?
I suppose it was a surprise. You know, these days everything seems to be leaked before the budget, and this is one thing that was kept under wraps right up until the last minute. And I suppose as anything goes, it's always the devil's in the detail. And we've been kind of waiting for the details since, and today even, you know, there is been a bit of a climb down, but we're still waiting for the detail to see how this is actually going to work. I suppose the one thing that comes to mind with today's announcement is it's only going to raise 32 million a year. And when you consider, like, you know, the complete budget is probably 50 or 60 billion, it's a drop in the ocean. And again, I suppose the main thing I'd be looking at is, how is this going to be administered? You know, is it going to cost as much to actually administer it than it's going to collect? So we'll have to see.
And I mean, that was even somebody's initial reaction to it was, it's only going to raise 80 million annually towards a MICA redress scheme that already is up in the 2.5 or 3 billion euro category. And of course, when it was first announced, it seemed to be kind of targeting everybody involved in the concrete industry. So today they've come out and said that it'll be a 5% levy to come in from September 2023, but it's not going to apply to precast concrete products. So does that then mean the Conjuring Concrete, it won't apply to, or do you know for certain yet?
We don't know for certain yet, but it would appear that it will not apply to us. But again, I suppose the devil's in the detail. It seems to me, you know, it's just very badly thought out. You know, Pascal Dunne, who was actually in the town last week in Tullamore, and we met with him, and there was a lot of concrete industry were there, and they put to him that basically, you know, this is really going to hit jobs and exports. And he did promise he'd listen and he'd take it all on board. So I suppose he has, but I think he just doesn't want to be seen to be climbed down completely, that there's the last bit of it left. But then again, it is pushed out to September 23, so there is the chance that it might just get lost along the way as well.
He did say today too that for a 3-bedroom house, the levy could lead to an increase in building costs of between 0.2% and 0.3%, which is a lot different than the kind of 2 to 4 or even 8% that has been suggested by some people. But really, the last thing that anybody looking at building a house wants to hear is that the price could potentially go up, given what, you know, the uncertainty that we're facing in terms of pricing.
I suppose if you consider, like, it was 80 million and it was going to add 4%, and now it's 32 million. So you'd imagine it's probably going to add about half that, but it's actually gone down, way down. The other thing I suppose to keep in mind is the cost of building a house has gone up substantially in the last year and a half with energy prices. Everything needs energy when it's been produced. So like the construction inflation at the moment is running around 30% mark. So, you know, if it is, let's say, another 2 or 3%, or even if it is only 0.2 or 0.3, it's still adding, and it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of the house building.
Undoubtedly, Conjuring Concrete, a large energy user, how are you finding the latest increase in energy prices and, I'm sure, raw material prices from all across Europe and the world?
Oh yeah, it's there every time. You know, you have to keep it monitored and keep monitoring your prices. And, you know, especially now we've a good proportion of our business is export to the UK market. So, you know, I mean, you have to be competitive over there. And we also have then, you know, it's a double whammy. It's actually in terms of the production, but it's also actually getting the product over to the UK market.
Do you have any long-term plans then? Does it bring into sharp focus things like looking at maybe alternative energy, solar, wind for factory, or is the scale of the challenge at the minute so large that those things are more of a long-term plan?
Oh no, our CEO there, John Condren, he's continuously looking at new technologies and improvements and efficiencies, and at the moment he's looking at a big solar project for the factory. He's very, very conscious of the carbon footprint. So that's one thing we will be looking at and trying to make some efficiency savings.
And hopefully it can make some difference. But I suppose I mentioned there to start, the budget overall seemed to be, you know, at large, well received by people in the business community. I mean, there was efforts made there in order to try to help them, you know, offset the rising cost of energy as well. From a chamber perspective then, do you think was that the general sentiment around Tullamore, or was any businesses asking certain questions or thinking more could have been done for them?
No, I think in fairness it was a fairly business friendly budget. You know, the electricity scheme, this BWES scheme is very interesting. Again, we're trying to assess the detail at the moment on it, but again, something had to be done in terms of energy prices. There is, and I'm more thinking even just the small retailers, and you know, you hear of small cafes and their electricity bill doubling overnight. So something had to be done, or else we're going to lose a lot of businesses along the way. You know, it is a hard time now, but it's not like 10 years ago in the deep recession, because the country was in a bad way at that stage as well. The country's finances are actually in a very good state at the moment. So the government did have scope to help out the small businesses, and in fairness, they did. And after meeting Pascal Dunhu last week as well, Minister there, he did say to us that he was going to keep it monitored. So if the scheme, if it's working, if it's not working, he will make adjustments.
And of course, even a big announcement there today too, that the debt warehousing scheme is going to be extended by another year. There's a lot of money put aside there that is owed to revenue that they've kind of put off another year. I think people in the hospitality sector in particular have particularly welcomed that. Is it a move you think the Chamber are welcome to?
Oh, definitely. I would imagine we'd have a lot of members that are utilising that scheme, and I think they'll need to continue to do so for a while more.
What's it like being president of the Chamber? We've been through 2.5, nearly 3 years of COVID, and you know, I have to say there's indications that there's a little bit of a rise there again in numbers, but probably be expected this time of year. But we've been through a lot. Then you throw in things like Brexit, then the energy crisis, escalating costs and all that. How are people doing? What's happening around Tullamore at present?
Well, I suppose, look, when you do look at things, there's always one crisis. You jump from one crisis to another, but that's when you're in business. It's some might be national crisis, others might be kind of domestic crises, but there's always something happening, and that's why, you know, our business community just need to keep adjusting and, you know, keep basically innovating and moving forward. But I suppose with the town at the moment, there is an awful lot of great things happening, and we might have heard the announcement there of Grafton Architects being appointed to do a consultation on the harbour site, so they'll be looking at doing a plan there. That's a site that basically the Chamber has been pushing for the last few years, working with Waterways Ireland and the council to try and develop. It's a fantastic site, and it's great to see something happening now with it.
And actually a local connection with Grafton too, in exactly. Vaughan Farrell, a Tullamore native.
Exactly. No, yeah. It's great now to see that.
That's great. Great to see that progress coming on that side as well. Anything else going on too? As I say, it's probably that time where people are getting ready now for the Christmas rush and hoping that next year there'll be a bit more stability there. But anything else happening for the Chamber?
I suppose the main thing, I suppose, is actually this weekend we have our business awards. Now it's actually 2019 since we last had the business awards with the pandemic. So we're really looking forward to that. So that's going to be held in the Bridge House on Saturday night. We still have a few tickets remaining if any of your listeners would like to get their hands on some. So they're available via our social channels. It's done through a local company again, Future Ticketing. So it's great to involve our local businesses in it.
Keep it all local as well. And hopefully there's tuxedos and suits and dresses still fit after the 3 years of COVID anyway. But I say, good to have things back.
Haven't tried my own one on yet now, but we'll hopefully.
You've a few days yet anyway. Anthony, thanks for coming in this evening. All the very best with everything in both Condren Concrete and indeed with Tullamore Chamber. How long have you left in your presidency at this stage?
Just another 6 months now. But I suppose the first year was during the pandemic. So it's been a strange presidency.
So are you suggesting you're going to stay on for another two or three then?
Not at all. We have good people in the organisation, and it's time to give them a turn as well.
Absolutely. Anthony Hanafy, thanks so much for that. Thanks. Anthony, of course, is President of Tullamore District Chamber of Commerce and Chief Financial Officer too at Condren Concrete Limited. Still to come this evening, Declan Doran from the Technological University of the Shannon will be along to talk about their partnership with remote hubs all across the Midlands. They've created a number of learning gates, two of which were launched this afternoon. Declan will give you all the details on that a little bit later in the show. Sticking a little bit closer to home at the minute, going across now to Kilcormac, and I'm delighted to be joined by Anne-Marie Feary of Feary's Farm Foods. Feary's Farm was set up in 1957 by Billy Feary, and they've been growing vegetables ever since, particularly his two sons, Alan and William, joined the business in later years to continue to grow the farm and indeed grow the business. In 2019, Billy's daughter Anne-Marie started producing an Irish beetroot juice using their own beetroot grown on the farm, nurtured pesticide-free in the fertile soils around Kilcormac. And they've recently launched a whole new product, and Anne-Marie is here to tell us all about that. Anne-Marie, firstly, fantastic to hear of the expansion into new products as well. Take us where the idea for the beet bullet first came from.
Thanks very much, Ronan. The beet bullet, well, it came about, I suppose, as you just mentioned in your nice introduction there. In 2019, we had the regular beetroot juice, and that, took off to a great success, and very happy with the way things were going. But I noticed over the couple of years that a lot of customers would continually ask, do you do the beetroot shop? And while I knew that a lot of athletes, drink beetroot juice, I figured that what we were offering wasn't what they were looking for. They were looking for concentrated beetroot juice. The reason for that is the athletes drink beetroot juice because of global research carried out, you know, linking drinking beetroot juice and improving athletic performance and recovery. And so they go after this nitric oxide boost. So basically, in a nutshell, you know, anything upwards of 300 milligrams of nitrates they're after. So to put that into context, you know, you're talking about nearly almost like a 500 ml of regular beetroot juice in order to get that nitric oxide boost. So that's a lot of liquid if you consider before you go for, you know, a run or a training session or a cycle. And so brings it back to they wanted to drink beetroot shots. So concentrated beetroot juice, literally just extracting a lot of the water out of it and getting that volume down. So with this in mind, we had to look into it, and we developed the Beet Bullet. So what the Beet Bullet is, it's six shots in one bottle, in one offering. And each shot is 40 mils. And so, as I was just saying, 40 mils is the equivalent of almost a large bottle of regular beetroot juice. So that was the thinking behind the product. And happy to say that we launched it this summer and to a very good reception. So we're really pleased with the feedback and how it's progressed even in the last few months. And I know it's early days, but it's been very positive.
But this is a 100% natural product too. It's just beetroot.
Correct. Yeah, there's no apple in this because, again, I suppose the athletes in this sense, they're not worried about the apple or the taste of the apple or the taste of the product in general. They're looking for the effects that it's going to have on them. So the apple is you know, not of interest to adding it to this product. It's the more beetroot, the better. So like a small bottle, say the 250 mils, that's the six shots, it's almost equivalent. It's a minimum of 16 beet in that small bottle. So it's a potent mix of beetroot.
It sure is. But again, it's a fantastic product. And thank you, because you sent a bottle in for me as well. And I tried a shot and it's absolutely loving. It is. There's a lovely boost off it as well. One of it, that's a huge amount of beetroot to be grown as well. So how has your farm changed then? You've obviously expanded the area of beetroot that you're sowing over the past number of years.
Yeah, so the acreage has grown in volume. Last year was 5-6 acres. And, you know, it's grown every year. And I'm very lucky in the sense that, I mean, I probably wouldn't be in this position. I wouldn't have started the business if I didn't have, you know, the fact that, you know, the family is grown, you know, my dad, my two brothers, grown the beetroot for me. So that's been huge. Even today alone was a busy day at home, all hands on deck. There must have been six people on the farm at home this morning, all involved in getting beetroot washed, ready for, you know, prepared to bring to Tipperary to get bottles. So a lot of work behind the scenes goes into the growing and the harvesting. And but in my family, I'm very, very lucky like that. They'll find the time and put huge efforts into helping me get this business off the ground and to grow it year on year. So I don't take it for granted.
When it comes to developing a new product then, like the Beet Bullet, did you use any local supports then? Like, did you use the Leo or anybody, or get any kind of special advice in terms of, number one, you know, creating the actual recipe and doing some trials on it, even down to then designing the bottles and the labelling for it?
Absolutely. And I mean, I was very lucky from year one, the product that we developed with the help of the local enterprise and innovation vouchers from Enterprise Ireland that allowed me work with Jadisk and the team down there. And, you know, went back to the source of that because, you know, that was a good process for me. It worked out really well. So again, when the Beet Bullet came to mind, we went back and reapplied for innovation vouchers. And again, any help and offering and mentorship provided by the LEO, my local enterprise office, has been instrumental throughout all of this. You know, you really couldn't do it or get the business off the ground really without, you know, everyone's support and helping hand. So yeah, that's been a huge benefit. benefit for me.
Being a business owner, and particularly in rural areas, can be challenging, and sometimes people often speak about a certain loneliness can come with it. But often when those supports are there, and even kind of initiatives like Acorns, again, a program that you've been through yourself, how did you find that, and what effect did it have on your business?
A huge effect. I mean, Acorns, by joining these networks of people, and actually lately I joined, I'm on another program, it's the Boyne Food Valley program. You're continuously meeting people, and all the businesses can be very different. It could be anything from a HR business in your group to a jewellery company to anything. But the overlap of problems that can arise on a day-to-day basis, or the help that you can provide for each other, is remarkable. And you know, like, by meeting with the groups and forming, you know, friendships, you have WhatsApp groups, drop a message. If it could be a technical problem, it could be anything, and there's always somebody that comes back, or, you know, offers advice that can be seen, you know, it can be very beneficial. And so I would encourage, or I would suggest to anyone, or to join groups like Acorns, or you know, anything that gets a group together and supports each other in business. Yeah, it's huge help.
And of course, you know, it's great, Bobby, to be able to share your kind of your own ideas too, and even share samples of your own product with you know, with fellow entrepreneurs too, and see what their assessment of them is. Your beetroot juice that you started out with, which of course is beetroot and has a little bit of apple blended into that, how has that been in terms of, say, sales and growth in the market since you first got going?
Yeah, but actually very good. Like, when I spoke to you, I think I spoke back in 2 years ago, and or maybe it was just at the beginning. Was very excited before, you know, how the product was received, and you know, like, looking to grow the business in 2020. And so COVID was a scary time when it started. We had, you know, forecast growth. We had made a lot of juice at that point for increased volume, and then a lot of my stock would have shut down very fast. And I was worried, I suppose, like everyone else, what's going to happen here. But in fact, as it happened, COVID really wasn't a hindrance as such in the end, because I think people really looked towards their health during this time. They were trying to boost their immunity. They were looking to where their food was grown, maybe more a focus on who was growing their food and local food producers. So that really helped me and my business. And also, I feel like customers sell your product for you. So while all the shows were cancelled and all the tastings in stores and all these things that help, you know, when you're just starting out to introduce your product to people and customers, while all of that stopped immediately, customers themselves that have, you know, tried your product and found it beneficial to them end up selling your product for you. And that's actually probably your best advertisement. So I find that, you know, was really strong for me over the last few years. And also the fact, you know, I suppose when I just initially said, when it was frightening when all your shops, some of your shops start closing at the start of COVID, it also puts the pressure on you to look at the shops that were doing well and where could, you know, how would you change things up, or what was the best thing to do around this. And so I suppose I looked at the supermarkets with the larger footfall, and Super Value. Initially, I was probably in around 6 Super Values. I had done the Super Value Food Academy course, and I was in 6 Super Values initially, but over the last 3 years, that's grown to 65 Super Values, in around 65 Super Values, and that's really helped to grow the volume of business and to grow the business nationwide. So definitely very positive as to how, you know, our first product, our regular beetroot juice, has worked out for us in the last couple of years.
That's fantastic growth as well. Are Irish people finally beginning to see how amazing a vegetable beetroot actually is?
Definitely. It's a very much on-trend vegetable. You know, I think it was underrated for so long, but I think there's been a lot of coverage and just articles in general highlighting the benefits for a whole host of reasons, for the enormous amount of health offerings, be it reducing high blood pressure naturally, or, you know, just for giving you energy, or the antioxidants, the vitamin C content. You know, I could go on and on, but like it hits a lot of it attracts a lot of customers for various reasons, and it is essentially our Irish superfood. And I think slowly but surely people are, coming to realise that. So
I think that's a hugely important point. Yeah. It grows relatively easily in Irish soils. It's a very natural and normal vegetable to grow in these parts as well. So why not utilise it as a credit to you for doing that and really bring it to market too? When it comes then to the beet bullet, in terms of stockists, will they be in Super Values too, or how do you see that being distributed?
So this product is more, it's more towards the athletic customer base. Now that's not, so for some people it's actually a convenient way if they're not a lover of drinking beetroot juice in general, and they know how good it is for them, and they just want a convenient kind of grab and go. It's a shot down the hatch and job done. But equally, our base for that is probably the athletic market. So with that in mind, stock is kind of more more veered towards, the likes of Ready to Run in, say, locally here, Ready to Run, Jodie has it for sale in Tullamore. And then some local stockers. We're just building up stocks at the moment, Nuts and Grains in Mullingar, Bastion Kitchen in Athlone, say, our own farmers market that we have. We have three farmers markets every Saturday in Kilcormac, Kilbeggan and Portumna. And it's for sale, locally there, also online. So I would imagine that the beet bullet would be more centred towards, sport nutrition shops for now anyway.
And is there a potential export market in it, do you think?
I do, but for now I feel a lot more energy has to go into just even getting it. There's a lot more work to be done around Ireland and to making sure that we're well-stocked and the brand is strong in Ireland. So for now, all energy is focused on our own country.
Absolutely, no. And I have to say, it's a fabulous product as well. And it's fantastic to see the development of it, coming with the existing beetroot juice that's on the market to then develop a special product. And look, at all I can do is wish you continued success with it. And I'm sure that 5 acres will keep doubling and doubling and year on year, given by the way you're talking anyway. But listen, fabulous work altogether, Anne-Marie. So to yourself and all involved, they're all the family involved in Fearie Farms at Kilcormac, well done. And look forward to catching up with you again soon.
I appreciate that. Thanks very much, Ron.
And there you go. It's a fantastic product as well. The Beet Bullet from Fearie's Farm. 6 shots in this bottle, it says. It's a 250ml bottle I have in my hand here as well. Super concentrated beetroot juice. But just look at some of the things. High in protein, no added sugar, 100% Irish beetroot. And each shot contains 300mg of natural dietary nitrates. So exactly, used predominantly by kind of athletes and people training for sports. But as Anne-Marie says there, you can use it if you just want to get that daily boost or vitamin boost for yourself as well. And how fabulous to do that with a vegetable that grows really well and really naturally in Irish soils. So well done to everybody there. You can find out more about them on fearsfarm.ie if you wish. Still to come on Taking Care of Business this evening, European Movement Ireland's Deputy CEO Stephen O'Shea will be here to talk about a public meeting that's taking place next week. It's entitled Energy and Rural Communities, and the group exists really to kind of show to people the importance of a connection between, say, Ireland and its rural regions, and indeed the EU and the various ways they can be leveraged, and how the EU can be used and they can be used as a voice for the ordinary citizens and businesses around. So Stephen will be on a bit later to give you a bit more information on that. But an announcement that was made today, and it's one that's worth bringing some attention to, the Technological University of the Shannon are opening a number of TUS learning gates at locations throughout the Midlands region and beyond, ensuring higher education opportunities are available to those living and working in these regions. I'm delighted to be joined by Declan Doran, Business Development Manager and Work Practice Coordinator at the Faculty of Continuing Professional Online and Distance Learning at TUS Athlone. A very good evening, Declan. A significant development from the faculty.
Good evening, Ron, and thank you for having me on. Yes, a really exciting development we've been working on for the last number of months, and indeed probably a year or two before that, putting work in the background. So today we launched two learning gates. One was in Banlasloe, in Banlasloe Enterprise Centre, and the one in the afternoon was in Vision 85 Hub in Portlaoise. So that was our two today.
Fijian 8-5, of course, the brainchild of Eamon Callaghan there, and it's not just a remote working hub or a remote hub. He has a barber on site, he has cafes as well. He was with me on the show a couple of months ago, a really, really fabulous venue there. But beyond that, you have a range of other venues that you're going to bring under these new two learning gates.
Yes, Ronan, so we have, I suppose, overall, we have venues in County Longford, County Westmeath, Leash, Offaly, Roscommon and East Galway, so quite a good reach. So today, as you mentioned, we're in Eamon Callaghan's facility in Vision 85, which is really excellent facility. Earlier on this morning, we're in Banisloe Enterprise Centre. So tomorrow, we're launching Edgeworthstown, which is Co-Works in Edgeworthstown. And in the afternoon, we're in the Spool Factory in Boyle. Then next Tuesday, we're in Port Harlington Enterprise Centre. And in the afternoon, we're in Bloom HQ in Mount Rath. And then on Wednesday, we're launching our Clouse Learning Gate in Wedmill and Motmellick. And then in the afternoon, we're launching in the Junction in Tullamore alongside Stream in Birr and Ehive in Edenderry. So I would really reach out to your listeners and say, if you're maybe not familiar with these remote working facilities, I would encourage them to definitely go and visit because they're really exceptional places.
How do you foresee the relationship developing then? Will these centres be used to deliver face-to-face education or be primarily giving people access to online education?
Yeah, so we are the Faculty of Continuing Professional Online Distance Learning at Clouse at Lone Campus. So the last number of years, we've moved to an online delivery platform where all our students are now taking all their study online in a part-time basis. And what we've noticed is we have a number of students that's coming now from across the Midlands region and indeed the wider nationwide region with students from the 32 counties all across the island. So for that reason, I suppose, to be in line with government policy on reducing carbon footprints and you know, allowing people to be able to work and study locally, the concept was developed where students could attend these facilities, where they could access all the infrastructure of Clouse, everything they need to study on the Athlone campus, that they can access it locally so they can potentially live and work locally, which we feel is really suitable to our busy adult learner with all the other commitments they have as well.
Yeah, I'm sure I think everyone I'm talking to lately, anyone that's working and is trying to navigate through children with training and all sorts of activities, they're definitely tight for time. So I think having facilities they can avail of like this could be a potential game changer for them, because I'm sure you're seeing it in your department. I'm sure that the demand for adult education is probably, you know, increasing exponentially year on year.
Absolutely. I think lifelong learning is growing and growing year on year. And people now see all the different opportunities that's there. Thankfully, over the last number of years, we've been very successful in receiving a number of funding. So people can access these upskilling opportunities, in some cases completely free of charge. And in other cases, they pay a small part payment of the programme fee. But because of all these opportunities, it's a case now where we can kind of become embedded in our community and notify people that these opportunities exist. And I suppose the feedback we've got from our students is that sometimes in rural Ireland, the broadband is poor and maybe it's a busy household. And we've noticed that students were meeting maybe for group work in hotel lobbies, etc. So I think this concept of these two learning gates allow our adult learners to meet and collaborate in these local hubs and potentially, you know, use them for their working if they're maybe called back to the office. Perhaps it's an ideal opportunity to stay local, to stay contributing to the local economy and to work in these hubs because, as I mentioned, they are really fantastic venues. They're warm, they're safe, with excellent broadband. And the beauty is now each of these regions has a strong linkage with Clouse and all these facilities are available on site in these remote working hubs.
And for students who are currently enrolled and indeed engaged in courses with the faculty, will they be able to avail of these facilities as of this week, essentially, or how will that work?
Yeah, so pretty much from the launch date, so all these hubs are open at the moment. So I've mentioned, I suppose, a number of our locations. I'll also mention a fantastic facility, the e-working centre in Mullingar, which is undergoing refurbishment at the moment. So that should be ready to go from next month as well. So we look forward to having an official launch in that facility. But all these venues are ready to go. And in fact, you know, I'm sure our students will be eager to go in and kind of suss out the situation and get a feel for the venue. And what I would say as well to your listeners is the beauty is, and some may not be aware, that remote workers can claim 3 vouchers annually, entitling them to book a place in their local remote working hub. So I think that's a really, really good initiative as well, to enable people to try out these facilities, see if they're a good fit, and you know, if it's something they'd like to use going forward.
Absolutely, and you make a good point there. Some of these hubs they're absolutely worth checking out, because they vary in terms of their style and their appearance, but overall the ethos behind them is just fantastic, and people have been really striving for a number of years there to create these hubs in their local communities, and I suppose to get the engagement from key stakeholders, the likes of TUS as well. So from that perspective, did the pandemic in some ways, did it help the likes of your faculty in order to really, you know, drive that whole idea of online learning and indeed make it more accessible for more people, and indeed, and therefore hopefully fill those skill gaps that, you know, many companies around the Midlands are probably facing?
Yeah, I think the pandemic probably expedited the move to remote working. Now, ourselves in the faculty, we had probably pivoted before, pre-COVID, to, I suppose, we responded to our students' needs in terms of our growing demand for programs was national. So it probably wasn't realistic to bring students from maybe County Loud, County Donegal, County Cork up to Athlone for physical classes. So we responded to our students' requirements to move online. And I suppose for us delivering online programs, we feel it's really, really important that the student still feels part of a community and still has that collegiality with one another and can build those relationships, because generally we find those relationships are what students get through these programs when things get difficult at maybe exam time or whatever it may be. So I suppose for us, collaborating with these remote working hubs to allow our students to see, you know, there's a water cooler in each of these facilities where sometimes the most rich networking and conversations happen. And ultimately, all of these students are adult learners, so they're professionals in their own right. So I think the collaborative, you know, synergy that can happen from those conversations and meetings in these remote working hubs can not only benefit their academic progression, but also in their work life. You know, it might lead to maybe new job opportunities, etc. And I think that's really, really important that we promote that as well.
And of course, the other, I suppose, knock-on of that as well is it means possibly less travelling then, so there's less cars on the road, there's less carbon footprint, there's less demand then on, you know, travel infrastructure, parking spaces, everything and the like as well. So really, you know, huge opportunities being opened up there too. If people want to find out more, Declan, about, you know, where those hubs are and indeed when those launch dates are happening, where can they find that?
They can go straight to our website, TUS Flexible Learning Midlands, and also what they can do, this press release this week in all the local papers, and they can have a look. So what I would say is tomorrow we're actually in Edgeworthstown Co-Works in the morning, so if you're around the Longford area, the Edgeworthstown area, call in to say hello to us in Co-Works. And also then we're back in the Midlands region in Port Harlington next Tuesday, and Mount Rath and Bloom HQ. And then on Wednesday we're in Webb and Melick, and also the Junction Tullamore. So what I would say is look out for us and go and visit your remote working hub, because it's definitely worth a look if you haven't been in to visit as of yet. And, you know, there's excellent student rates there as well, being a TUS student. So I would encourage all your listeners to visit the remote working hub and look out for our collaborations. You'll see our beautiful TUS Learning Gate plaque on the entrance to all these facilities.
Declan Thorne, thank you so much for that this evening.
Thank you, Ronan.
And that's Declan Thorne, their Business Development and Work Practice Coordinator, the Faculty of Continuing Professional Online and Distance Learning at TUS Athlone. And as Declan says, keep an eye out on those launch dates and maybe go along and just check out some of those fabulous co-working and remote working hubs that exist across the Midlands. Although a lot of those names are beginning to roll off our tongues, and they're in our heads now because we're hearing so much about them, and such has been the scale of the work and the achievements that they've gathered over the last couple of years. Well done to everybody involved. The Faculty of Continuing Professional Online and Distance Learning at TUS Athlone are delighted to advise that they are hosting, on behalf of TUS and the European Commission Representation Ireland, in cooperation with European Movement Ireland, a public meeting on energy and rural communities. It's taken place next week, and to find out more about that, I'm delighted to be joined by Stephen O'Shea, and Stephen is Deputy CEO at European Movement Ireland. Stephen, a very good evening to you. Now, Midlands 103's listeners will be very familiar with TUS Athlone, European Movement Ireland less so. Could you introduce the group and who you are and what you set out to do?
Sure, no problem. So European Movement Ireland is an organisation that essentially seeks to explain European developments to Irish people and engage and talk to Irish people about European developments. And I suppose the big priority at the moment is energy from a European and Irish perspective. So we're delighted to be working with the European Commission and with TUS on this event in the Midlands campus next Monday evening at 6:30 about energy and rural communities.
When was the group first set up?
We were set up in 1954 as an organisation to campaign and advocate for Ireland's EU membership. And then we would have played a pivotal role in the referendum to join the EU in 1972, 50 years ago last May. And we've been working on EU issues at every level of society, with schools and universities, with business and with communities across the country ever since in various guises.
The reason I ask was, obviously, given what transpired with the UK and Brexit recently, you'd wonder, does that question about our relationship with Europe, is it something that's on people's mind, and are they actually acutely aware of maybe the importance of that relationship? So to hear it go so far back is quite interesting indeed. But I suppose we are a little bit of an outlier, that we're, you know, this little rock just the far side of the UK that's not part of mainland Europe. How do you think Irish people rate overall in terms of our awareness of what being a member of the EU actually does for us?
I think Irish people overall are most supportive, or one of the most supportive countries in terms of their EU membership, and your pan-European surveys would bear that out. Support for membership in Ireland last year in terms of polling we did is at about 88%. So I think people see the benefits of membership. They have seen it in their own lives and communities over the last 40 years, be it through, you know, being able to travel abroad more easily, infrastructure projects, whatever it might be. And then I think absolutely in recent times we have seen what has happened in the UK as a result of Brexit. So, I mean, I think that again makes the benefits of membership more acute in people's minds. That's not to say that everything is perfect. Obviously, there are concerns that people have. There are, you know, ideas and thoughts that people have always in our engagement with people about how to make things better. But I think overall people, you know, in Ireland are on the European level quite supportive of EU membership.
Of course, when you talk about concerns that citizens might have at present, I mean, every citizen and pretty much every business out there probably has deep concerns around energy and rising energy prices now too. So for obvious reasons, you're pulling together this meeting next week. But tell us more about it. Yeah. When's it taking place and what are the central themes of it?
Yeah, no problem. So this is we're having a public meeting on energy and rural communities with the European Commission. It's next Monday night, 6:30, in the Douglaside Theatre in the Midlands campus of Technological University of Shannon, which would have been previously at Lone IT. And it's the second in a series of four meetings we're doing around the country. We held the first one last week in Waterford, where well over 100 people turned out. And the purpose is to engage with people, small businesses, whoever would like to come along, on the challenges we currently face in relation to energy and how these, you know, can best be addressed at a local, national and EU level. So there are developments at European level spearheaded by the Commission. So the Commission will be there to explain those, but also to listen to people and to get people's feedback on their ideas and their concerns also. Because while this is an immediate challenge we face coming into this winter, it's unlikely to be one that's going to resolve itself in the short term. So it's really important to engage with people and get their views on how these challenges both impact them, but also, you know, on ideas and particular initiatives they may have. A lot of communities, you know, we find on issues like this, a lot of communities come up with, you know, their own sort of community solutions, and it's really always interesting, you know, to learn about those and to learn what people are doing in their own locality. So that's the idea. And it'll also be an information sharing exercise in terms of, you know, what's coming down the track at a European level also.
That's Stephen O'Shea there, the Deputy CEO of European Movement Ireland. And Stephen speaking about an event that's taking place, just to remind you, next Monday evening, the 24th of October, in the Technological University of Shannon at Lone Midlands Campus. And it's at 6:30 p.m. with refreshments being served from 5:45 p.m. Again, you can go to ait.ie or to study there to find out more about that and try have an attempt there to have your voice heard as maybe a citizen or as a business owner too, and express your concerns and make sure that those concerns are brought back to the powers that be at EU level. Some of the speakers there, again, just to remind you, will be Kieran Mulvey, the Just Transition Commissioner, Dr. Isabella Donnelly, a Senior Energy and Environmental Engineer at ORS and a Coordinator for the SEAI Sustainable Energy Communities. It will be moderated by Tim Hayes, Head of Communications, European Commission Representation in Ireland too. You'll see various registration links for the event there, so check out the various social media channels and the TUSER AIT websites for more information on that. And that is it for me for this evening. Thank you for tuning in as always, and for your texts, always appreciate them. Joe Cooney is up next with Country Roads after news at 8 p.m. I'll be back next Tuesday evening from 7, of course, with more business news stories from around the Midlands. Big thank you to Anne-Marie Feary of Feary Farm Foods there for introducing their new Beet Bullet drink to us. And again, fantastic to see local companies taking a local and an indigenous vegetable and creating a great business from it too. Big thanks also to Declan Dorn from TUS, as they've now partnered with remote hubs across the region to bring higher education to more regions and to spread the reach of TUS and open access for all for education. So lots of stuff happening across the Midlands. Delighted always to bring you the big stories. Stay safe and talk to you all next Tuesday evening.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.